And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis. The late Patty Fink will either be joining us, or the message she left for me when I was hosting the last hour and I haven't listened to yet is that she isn't going to be joining us. We'll find out later.
We'll find out. I checked my messages. I don't have anything.
Oh, she called me.
Okay.
But I was on the air when she called.
Gotcha. Okay.
Our guest today is Todd Whitley. Todd is the executive director of Hope for Peace and Justice. He's an activist, a father, as of 3 days ago, a grandfather. He'll be leaving us at the end of the summer by. And he put together Decision Day and all of the activities around Decision Day. Most people know him for his monument rallies. Because you've adopted that monument, haven't you, Todd?
That is the community's home, and what better place to express joy and celebration than that place.
Mm-hmm. Let's just talk a little bit about, first of all, leaving us at the end of the summer. Where are you leaving us to go?
Since getting involved here in Dallas, moving here 3 years ago, I've gotten to meet a lot of people in our community who have been gracious enough with me to teach me what they do and why they do it, and I've become inspired by that. Reverend Matulski, who was the interim pastor at Cathedral of Hope, really provided a lot of opportunity for me to stretch my purpose and my calling. And through getting to do the work here, I retired from my job this month last year looking for – it was a 26-year job, and I wanted to find the thing for me to do with
you just can't stick with anything, can you?
Yeah. I hope this one lasts as long. You know, I wanted to find that thing, and I got to find it. And so I'm going to go to Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, and I'm going to enroll in their – well, I've been accepted in their Master of Arts in Social Transformation program because I want to know how to do what people like Patty and others have been doing all along. I want to know how to do it better.
So you should have gone to the School of Patty.
Well, I've learned a lot from the School of Patty and the School of – Mike Grossman and the School of Leslie Michelle and so many people. But the other component is faith. I think everything that we're all engaged in here in the community is faith work, whether we're doing it through a church or a faith-based institution. And I think faith is the battleground for us.
It's your definition of faith. See, I think your definition of faith is that people help each other and that their religion is personal. And other people's definition of faith lately is – if my religion tells me I can't do my job, you need to pay me for it anyway. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of good examples of that one.
Yeah. And I can turn you away.
And I can turn you away because it's my religion. Doesn't matter.
Exactly.
It's government office.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we digress.
Yeah, and that's not it, you know. Faith is something that should bring us together, that should inform us mm-hmm. to love our neighbor as ourselves, no matter what faith tradition you are. Everybody's has some form of that, and very difficult for me to embrace is the notion that there are people of faith who don't believe that narrative that we can exclude people mm-hmm. or that we're better than other people but aren't doing anything about it. And that's part of what I want to do. I want those people of faith to know they need to stand up and say this is not what that's all about.
Right. Let's just jump around a little bit unless you wanted to.
No, I was just going to – I congratulated you the week after, but I wanted to congratulate you
yeah.
again for putting together the fabulous march / rally on the day of the decision.
Mm-hmm.
You did that was just wonderful. It was really great to be a part of that. Can you talk a little bit about how you even put that together?
So two years ago when we were celebrating in 13, the Windsor – case.
Mm-hmm.
So Miguel and I had been to the January rally on the eve of the Supreme Court's decision hearings that year, and that's where we were with our little Love is Love signs.
I remember that.
Yeah. And then come June, I got to help I was on the fringe of helping plan that event. And one of the things I wanted to bring to the table was other organizations, HRC, Lambda Legal, all of us together. And some people said, everybody didn't like to participate exactly like that. It's really hard. And I'm like, well, why? We're all about the same thing, and why would they not? Well,
I think what you did was you invited 15 organizations and 12 participated, probably
that year,
something like that.
We got some of the more prominent organizations, and it wasn't easy, but they
you
came.
Did it really just by asking.
Asking and being a little bit tenacious and not taking no for an answer.
Sure, but I think what hadn't happened. What hadn't happened in a while was some of them weren't asked.
Maybe that was it. Yeah. And so building on that through the Harvey Milk Day the next year, mm-hmm. And then through some events that Hope for Peace and Justice co-sponsored with Cathedral of Hope and other organizations celebrating women, we pulled together every group that has a vested interest in the dignity and the rights of women, which is all of them, and they came together in one room. And then when we did an immigration event, partnering with other organizations. So when we began to get together for this year, starting with the courts, the Fifth Circuit's potential ruling in January, we got together, this coalition of people, because I didn't want it to be what Todd wanted, or from a particular point of view as, oh, Cathedral of Hope or something. I wanted just everybody to get involved and participate. And so starting with that event and then working into the Supreme Court's hearing on marriage in April through Harvey Milk in May, working toward what would happen in June, I wanted to be very intentional about being inclusive, about it looking truly like what the LGBT and allied community in Dallas looks like, which we don't necessarily always see. I think possibly it's because people aren't asked, like you said, yeah. Or encouraged, or because maybe they don't trust that a predominantly white male gay community wants their involvement. And so as we invited people from the community came. There's one sitting behind me in this room, and another person who came to a meeting they were invited to and said, oh, you know, I don't think I have anything to offer, but I just really felt compelled. And their contributions were incredible, through ways that nobody else had thought of or in doing things that nobody else did. And I think that's what we modeled, so that by the time we reached this point of celebration on June 26th, there was a fever pitch of people motivated through other groups that they belong to, through their churches, through memberships that they held, and it probably was one of the most fulfilling days of my life.
Okay, so decision day, here's what happened. The decision we knew was going to come down between like 9 and 9:15, mm-hmm. if it was coming that day. So a press conference was scheduled for 11:30. 12 o'clock, John Warren, our county clerk, was scheduled to start issuing licenses. Was it 6 o'clock at Cathedral of Hope? We were having a celebration. The celebration lasted, what, about 2 hours? Hour and a half?
Cathedral, hour and a half.
About an hour and a half. 7:30, we started a march. Took about a half an hour to go from Cathedral of Hope down to the monument there. There was a rally, and it was, you know, I've never seen so many people on the streets of Cedar Springs other than for the parade. Just a massive number of people. Okay. That was so Dallas. I just want to say, compared to other cities, I'm not criticizing. I was down in Houston for the parade the end of June, the next day after Decision Day.
Yep.
The most disorganized, not badly run, most fabulous parade I've ever been to. 650 people, they're saying, were there now. We turned a corner and...
You mean in the parade?
In 650,000 people at the parade.
Okay.
At the parade, yeah. We turned a corner and there were these parking garages, 12 stories high, people hanging out of every level up to the roof. And we were just like, my God, what's going on there? But looking for your group, you know how here in Dallas, okay, if you're entry number 50, that will be behind number... 49, right. And behind number 50 will be?
51.
Yeah, 51, right. And there's a marker in the street, right? Not in Houston. 72 was in front of us. We were, I think, number 70. Behind us was 58. Next to us. Didn't, but in the long run, what did it matter? I mean, so disorder. It was wonderful. Okay. Fort Worth. Not real thrilled about issuing marriage licenses, right? They didn't have a schedule. They started issuing at 10 o'clock. We were so pissed because John wanted to be first, thinking, well, nobody else is going to do it. But we had a schedule. And it's not just the gay community. It's so Dallas. I love this. It's so Dallas. Our press conference started at 11:30 in time for the noon news. Couples had started lining up about 9:30 in the morning. straight people were walking in and they were going, oh my God, what's going on? And all the gay people celebrating said, nah, go to the front of the line. You know, and they got their licenses or whatever they needed. Everybody knew it was going to start at noon. Everybody knew George and Jack were getting married first. Everybody knew Denise Garcia was going, or Denise Garcia was going to issue the first one, and the second one was going to be Tanya Parker because she was going to break her I don't do marriages thing. It's all planned. 12 o'clock, the first one was issued. Then they started issuing others. 6 o'clock, no other city did that. It's where we get our reputation of being stuck up. It wasn't stuck up. It was organized. As somebody covering it, and not just for me, but for the Dallas Morning News and other people too, it made it so easy to cover.
Well, actually, you know, the morning that day and the day before, Laura Martin, who's our Detective Laura Martin, who's our LGBT liaison with the Dallas Police Department, had called me, and we'd been talking almost daily. She wanted, will you let me know just as soon as you hear? And so I'd been texting her quite a lot. And so that morning we were speaking right up until 9 o'clock because she had to go into a meeting with the chief. And she said, well, if it's just 50 or 100 people, we could probably stay on the sidewalk. But if it's more than that, it's probably going to have to go into the street because people won't stay on the sidewalk if it's more than that. So I pulled up their Facebook event, how organized we are, and there were 688 people at RSVP'd at that point. So I texted that to her, a little screenshot of it, and I said, we're notoriously awful about RSVP, but 688 took the time. So I'm going to guarantee we're going to be in the street. She's like, oh, thanks. So, I mean, seconds later, the decision came down, and I texted. I said, "We're on. You know, we won." And you know, how many showed up? Thousands.
Over 1,100 had hit the event, and yeah, there were estimates of a couple of thousand people involved in one way or the other.
I thought it was closer to 2,000 at Cathedral of Hope that night. Because if you're just counting who was in the main sanctuary, you're undercounting. Back was packed. The Jews, we were in the back doing our own thing. There were people who were outside, never came in. It was packed.
It was literally standing room only.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd never seen anything like
that. Yeah.
And, you know, the planning, while being intentional, because, you know, we like to follow a schedule, even though I'm late for a lot of stuff, we were most intentional about being inclusive.
No wonder you want to learn from Patty.
Yeah. No, I mean, I felt the late Patty Fink helped me know that it's okay if I'm not exactly here on time. But we were early-ish.
He was. He was on time. He followed Patty's other trend. He even texted and let me know, I'm on my way.
Kindred spirit.
So you're a good student. But, you know, there was something else that happened that was a big news on that day, and that was personal for these guys. Mm-hmm. We didn't introduce, but Miguel is here also, Todd's partner. What else happened?
Well, so the 26th was the seventh possible
decision day.
Mm-hmm. And so every day of those days, I'd gotten up, you know, prepared. I had my outfits ready and ready to go. And we just knew. We knew it was going to be that day. We said goodbye that morning. Like any other day, I was ready, been to the gym, you know how we do. And came home and heard the verdict on Twitter, posted it wherever I needed to, and then posted on Facebook, will you hashtag marry me? We met on Facebook. I mean, so it's kind of fitting that.
Did you do hash genuflect before?
No.
No. Wow.
So he proposed on Facebook.
So I proposed, and so people are texting me while I'm trying to get ready and get to, you know, get everything going, get ready for the press conference, load up the podium in my car again and whatnot. And has he said yes? Has he said yes? And then about half an hour later, he changed our relationship status to engaged.
Oh, so romantic. Wow.
Yeah, we're a modern couple.
Congratulations.
But you know what?
Wait. Would Miguel, did it take you 30 minutes to think about it?
No, it was just purposely. I did it purposely for him. It's a little running joke that we have between each other.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I'm not going to be too eagerly. I'm letting
him. See, it would take me 20 minutes to figure out how to change it from.
Yeah, I think he's been ready to marry me for a while, which is a huge honor because I'm a mess. And
those of us who know you.
You know this is true.
But,
right?
But you're a great mess.
He's a good man. And you know, I wasn't sure I was ready. And I definitely, you know, we'd had conversation. We weren't going to do this until everybody could do it. And I was just truly overcome with the emotion of the moment.
So you're moving to California. Are you going to do it before you move to California or after?
We're still talking about it. I'm gonna, he's going to go there. I'm going to join him after a year or so. And then we'll talk about if we're going to have a ceremony.
Our best friend said to us, who's kind of the party planner of the group, when he read the engagement, he was the one that was with me at the press conference and everything, and he said, I can't do a going away party and a wedding celebration before you leave, so you can't do it yet. So I don't know.
Okay, so this is where the Dallas thing comes in. In the first week, they issued up through – there was Friday issuing of licenses, and then the whole next week, they issued 360 licenses to same-sex couples in Dallas, approximate. It's within one or two of that. But 360 licenses. Other cities in Texas issued more.
Austin did.
Austin issued more. Houston issued more, we think. They're so resistant to it that we're not sure exactly what they issued. Overtime hours at the county clerk's office have been canceled because they've been able to handle the number of people. If anybody's there at closing time, they'll stay. They'll get your license. It's not that at all. It has nothing to do with they don't want to take care of the gay people. It's we'll do extra hours if we need them. We haven't really needed them. So they're back to regular hours. In Dallas, we plan.
We do.
Brian and I are getting married next June.
Congratulations.
I never, ever thought I would hear those words come out of David's mouth.
You'll be back and probably, yeah. We plan.
Well, a ton of Dallas people have already gotten married.
Sure, they.
A ton of us.
All over the state, people have already gotten married in other states. We need to take a break. Let's take our break, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly. We'll talk more about this. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. I'll check my message from Patty, see if she's coming. Todd Whitley's our guest. He is the executive director of Hope for Peace and Justice, and the what would his title be of monument ceremonies and parties and celebrations and
ad hoc rallier, I would say.
Party at or monument ad hoc will come up with something during the break. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is Lewis from UT Arlington, and I listen to Lambda Weekly podcast at lambdaweekly.com.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. Patty will be here with us today. We weren't sure. I couldn't take your message. I was on the air when you had called in. Our guest today is Todd Whitley. He's the executive director of Hope for Peace and Justice, and he's the monument commemoration guru. How's that for a
title?
There
you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like that.
Uh-huh. I have to share, though, that when Todd had his birthday recently, it was so fitting that his friends feted him with a rally. They had signs on pickets and were giving cheers and chants and, all for a happy birthday. It was really very well done. So impressed. Totally impressed, Todd.
I have so many wonderful friends, the people that I've met. And that was really a we love celebrating birthdays and celebrating people that we love, but they really it showed me that they validated and respected the work that I'm involved in. And it was silly and over the top and everything that they say I am anyway. So one sign had it was like a little princess sign, and there was bow ties for Todd and honk if you love Jesus and Todd Whitley, and just fun, a bunch of fun. They just had a lot of fun with it. It was really sweet.
Well, speaking of birthdays, though, there was a brand new birthday in your life.
New birthday in our family.
Tell us about it.
We're pop pops. We're grandfathers now. As of Wednesday, Keaton Thomas Ferguson was born in Oklahoma City, and it's the first grandchild. And his mother has a son also, and so we kind of have two instant grandchildren with the birth of Keaton. We got to meet him yesterday, and the love that I felt in that moment looking at him and seeing him was familiar, and yet it was a completely different kind of joy than I've ever experienced in my life.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
That's huge.
Now, that's one of the things I actually wanted to talk about is, I guess, Before you got involved in activism, what led you to that after you came out? Because for those that don't know, Todd was married previously to a woman.
Lots of times.
And that might explain the delay to plan the next time. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Great. Understood. Understood.
Right. Yeah. Welcome, Todd.
Yeah, so yeah. I married young during college the first time. We had two sons and then found ourselves a family of three. So I raised these two boys and then was led into another marriage with, I think, the person that I was destined to meet, because she's the one that allowed me to love myself enough to come out. And you might think that to this day, you know, she would hate me, when in fact she is, wow. My best friend, one of our biggest supporters, and we each brought two children into our marriage, and we are still a family of six, plus the people that each of us loves, plus the people that they love.
She's remarried.
She's in
in a relationship with somebody.
And so it's her natural son, another man's son, who has had this child, and yet because of the bond of love and family that transcends a marriage license. The family still considers us fathers in a way and grandparents now of this child. It would be Pam that would write in a bit of prophecy. She had started a blog while I was going through XK therapy, which lasted off and on for 6 years, to try to not be gay.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
That was a process. She would write in her blog that was anonymous at the time, but allowed her to deal with what she was going through, and also declared to people of faith that they needed to love gay people. And that was something willfully that she was doing. She wrote one time that, and I'm paraphrasing this, if this doesn't work and Todd can't be cured of his same-sex attraction disorder, that's what they called it, if Todd can't be cured of being gay, he will come out, and when he does, he'll come out 150% and be standing on a street corner someday with a sign.
Wow.
And that pissed me off at that time, but she was exactly right, because once...
Well, she wasn't exactly right. You usually have two.
Well,
because you do have two hands.
That's true. And everybody I know has a sign, and I have sign-making supplies in my car at all times. Once I came out and realized that I needed to come out, not gay, but come out Todd. I needed to come out and not be ashamed of who I was and everything else that is good about me that I hated, I allowed that to be manifest. And then want to challenge anybody who feels that way about themselves or makes someone feel badly because of who they are. So I think that's what led to that. She definitely allowed me to find that place. And then moving to Dallas.
From
Granbury, a little small town outside of Fort Worth.
That's Hood County.
Hood County,
one of our favorite counties.
We'll get to that.
Doesn't know that story, it's their county clerk was one of the most obnoxious about not issuing licenses.
And you know her religious beliefs into her office. Right. She said that.
When Pam and I went to get our marriage license in 99, we both were on our second marriage, right? She and I had both been divorced, and nobody in that clerk's office challenged us on a religious belief that we shouldn't get married because we
weren't
married.
They didn't deign you with their disapproval?
There was no disapproval noted.
Wow.
Well, let me give you my disapproval.
Thank you, David.
I do disapprove. I don't think gay people should be marrying members of the opposite sex. So that's what I'm disapproving of.
When we can't be truly, authentically who we are, we hurt people.
Of course we do.
We hurt other people.
That's what is so insidious about that argument. Pastors after that decision were saying, gay people could get married. You just have to marry somebody of the opposite sex, just like the rest of us. Like, we're tortured by it. You should be too. I didn't hear anything loving in that statement at all.
No,
about the partner that you're marrying and destroying that person's life? I mean, fortunately, in your wife's case, you weren't destroying a life. She was supportive of you, but that's not always the case.
Well, and she'll tell you that it's made her a better person, which is a very graceful thing. But our sons, they're huge advocates and allies, and I think they learned a lot from the relationship that we modeled, what we went through.
You think they prefer having a happy father to one who isn't? Makes sense.
Much happier.
How did you get involved in ex-gay therapy?
The preacher of our church after I was kind of forced out, found the program for me. It was in Irving, and it was kind of a condition of everybody that, because we were involved in the church there, with the youth, with the families, with the
was it a full-time live-in program?
No, I would commute once a week for therapy.
Or just once a week?
Once a week for therapy and group, like a group, like, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous kind of program.
And were you at the time experimenting at all or just thinking about it?
I was trying to not do anything related to the same-sex attraction disorder.
So you were
praying the gay away.
So you were busy praying it away.
It was part of it.
Okay, so... And then you just went to therapy. Tell us a little bit about the therapy. What did that involve?
I think you want to know.
Yeah, I do.
It was very controversial.
I think they should all be made illegal, not just for kids, but...
Yeah, it was... there was some good that came out of it. Early on, it was a textbook Nicolosi kind of method where we would be taken outside to play basketball. And a lot of us did fit a stereotype that we weren't athletically inclined, largely because many of us didn't have a male influence to tell us we could do it or to challenge us or to teach us how to do it. And we would have to play shirts and skins, which mortified just about everybody. There would be some voice work. There would be, a lot of that kind of stuff. And then there would be...
Did you ever make a basket?
Did not make a basket. I was pretty
I'm
good
asking
defense,
the questions that I'm interested in.
That's,
I want to go back to the voice work because there are an awful lot. I was raised as a Southern Baptist, went to Baylor Bear, everything, Jerusalem on the Brazos. And I've heard a lot of Southern Baptist men from Texas speak, and I think they could all use some therapy on that.
So what was involved in voice work, trying to make you
being
sound less gay?
Sounding less gay, because a lot of us do sound a certain kind of way. Tons of us were conservative, had conservative faith backgrounds. Nearly everybody was Baptist or Church of Christ or Methodist or something like that. And they would focus on that and those aspects of things that might make us more masculine or feel more comfortable about being male. And the whole thing that was missed was, I think, as a former friend in the church would tell me, we're all a blend of the masculine and feminine, and present that in different ways. And my friend would say, you down yourself for the traits that you think are feminine or whatever. He said, you're closer to a whole person that God created than I am. And he was this real masculine guy. But he said, you've got nurturing characteristics that I don't. You've got creativity that you express that I don't. And so I think the therapy was wrong in a lot of ways.
When did you have an epiphany or a breakthrough that this isn't working, this is wrong, I need to be me?
I'm glad you asked that question. I would have worded it a whole lot differently.
We went through holding therapy, which is akin to having an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in a bar. You just don't do that. So those feelings that people were trying to suppress were being felt anyway. And there was a process where his therapy veered a little bit into more of a spiritual experience in revealing who you are to God, reaching out to God. And those of us in a very conservative, we didn't raise our hands ever. In trying to... accept who you are through the Spirit and through a relationship with God. And what that did for me was it emancipated me in a way of I wasn't changing. My sexual expression didn't change ever, not once. We tried. Bless her heart. She put up with so much. It didn't change, but what changed was I began to accept myself so that the day that I came out, we're coming up on, 7 years,
You mean the day you first came out?
The day that I came out to her and said, I can't do this anymore. I'd had enough of this feeling of not wanting to die in maybe a suicidal way, but I couldn't do it. Empty, meaningless, and hating who I was. And I said, I can't do it anymore.
I think one thing that you knew was you love your kids. You love your wife. Maybe not in a sexual way, but you love her. is what you've been saying, that if I have all these, you had a good job that you had been in for years. I think what you were saying to yourself was, if everything here is right, something else is wrong.
Yeah, his last words to me were, your decision isn't whether to come out gay, it's whether to come out Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my launching point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And it hurt everybody for a long time. Our church turned its... Well, I left, too, but it turned its back on me and her and our children.
Now, isn't that hateful?
And you know what?
What did your kids have to do with it? I struggled with that a lot, yeah.
And yet I've also learned grace myself because you know, they just weren't prepared. A lot of people just didn't know what to say, what to do. I think that love us from a distance, but they don't know how to deal with their own grief.
Hate the sin, but love the good example.
The son of the preacher there, who was in the youth group, reached out to me on Facebook, and he said, "I don't know why. I haven't even told you this. I don't know why we're not friends on Facebook, but I just need you to know how inspirational you were to me, and how sorry we were to see you go, and we didn't even really know why. And I still regret that. I left them. I stayed in the community, but I left those kids that I had been working with and teaching and them teaching me." And he said, "And what we did to you was wrong, and I'm sorry for that." You know, and he's a young man working, you know, in a career in another state. And
it's so interesting how that generation of evangelicals and others in conservative religions are getting it in large numbers right now.
Yeah,
but I think him knowing you is a good reason for that.
You know, I hope, as I stayed in the community, got back involved with the school, I was involved with the basketball boosters, you know, I was one of those parents, and the choir booster president. You know, I know there were gay kids in those programs that needed to see someone standing up and being who they were. And also young children of faith, teenagers who believed in God, who needed to see a different way of expressing their faith. And that generation, they're largely responsible for a lot of the shift that we're seeing and a lot of the change that's going to happen.
And I've told this story on the air before. I was talking to a GSA, a Gay Straight Alliance, out in East Dallas in one of the high schools, very large GSA in that school, great kids. And we're just talking about different things, just different topics were coming up. And one girl said, "What do I do in my church? They tell me I'm going to hell." And, I mean, that outrages me. And I said to her, "I can tell you're tough." And she was. But on this, she was practically in tears. I said, "Next time somebody tells you that, I want you to look them in the face and you say, 'How dare you judge me?'" Because that's how I look at it. I don't judge anybody else. I don't care enough about somebody's personal beliefs. How dare they judge her and do that to a kid? I mean, you were an adult already. If they do something like that to you, you needed to learn to stand up. What happened finally to you was good. Do you think one of the reasons you were having that you delayed your coming out that long was because you never had somebody in your life tell you it's okay to
Absolutely.
Be who you are?
I didn't even know. I was so sheltered, probably because you know my mother knew. I mean, our mothers know, right? She tried to make me a preacher, which is ironic, by the way. Not that I'm headed down that path exactly. I didn't know about the AIDS crisis. I didn't know who Harvey Milk was. I knew about Jonestown, but I didn't know about anything else gay. I didn't know that being gay was something you could be. I just knew I was dealing with it. I met this woman that we had good chemistry, and, oh, this is great. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is the path, because I didn't know that you could live an authentic self. And so that led me down some paths that ended up hurting me and a lot of other people.
Okay, Todd.
What's gay about Jonestown, though?
Nothing.
Things I knew about.
That was fanatic right-wing religion.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And
I
knew
about
that. Yeah.
And I think they kept that away from me.
Okay, so Todd, I want you to meet polar opposite Josh, our board operator. Josh, did you ever know anything about a possibility of ever being straight?
No.
Nobody ever told you in your life, you know, Josh, You might end up with a wife.
No.
No, okay. I just wanted to. So not everybody grew up quite that way.
I was sheltered on the other side.
Yeah.
And it was such a powerful thing. And I think, you know, like in our early days, we would get emails from, you know, kids out in East Texas who would say, you know, you're the only gay thing we have out here,
wow,
listed on the air. Because it's such a powerful, I mean, they really do sort of have you by the balls, whether you're male or female. You know, when they yank your spiritual life and your belief in God and jack with that about who you are, yeah, you know, and that level and that intensity of condemnation is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazingly powerful.
We learned in church today, the Pastor Thomas spoke and said that we are spiritual people, beings having a human experience. And how dare they treat any child? I mean, imagine what we could have accomplished if we had been nurtured as exactly who we were when we were children. I know a lot of art and beauty comes out of pain, but think what we could have accomplished if all along every child, regardless of their sexual orientation, were nurtured in love for exactly what they had, encouraged to be better, encouraged to be more, but valued for who they are. And unfortunately, that's where the work needs to be done in churches and in faith communities, to take back the message of you are fearfully and wonderfully made into exactly what I believe that writer intended.
You're made to be who you are. That's Todd Whitley. He's the executive director of Hope for Peace and Justice and the executive director or president of Monument Commemorations.
Right.
On Cedar Springs Road.
Organized
monument commemorations. Whether we've had some for people who've passed away, we've had some celebrating, whatever that commemoration is, and it will be the right tone if Todd is doing that commemoration. Are you going to do one last one before you leave?
You know, if we have a reason to do it, I'd be glad to be a part of it. I'm, you know, honestly, I'm just thrilled and proud when I looked out from that monument. Oh, man.
As far down Cedar Springs as you could see, it was packed with people.
I've never seen anything like it. I got to stand up there.
One thing that you forgot to plan. Now, we were talking about how Dallas overplans. Right after the break, you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Our guest is Todd Whitley. Todd helped plan Decision Day in Dallas and made sure everything went nice and smoothly.
I think it's fair to say you're a community organizer now.
Yes. Okay, honor. So here's what went wrong. We get to the monument. Thousands of people there, like as far as you could see, and it started raining so hard. It wasn't like it started raining hard. It was like somebody poured a bucket of water on your head.
It
was that much. Within 3 minutes, the street was flooded. It was just flash flood. Okay, so the next night I was in Houston. Airheads that I was with. I had marched with the Jewish groups from around Texas. And straight and gay, different Jewish groups went and together had a big wedding cake float. Sarah and Suzanne, the first couple that got married in Texas back in February, they were on the float and they were putting rings on each other's fingers. Every time they did that, the cheers were just going up. We got more cheers than I think any other float. But people were looking in the sky and it was like, oh, how are they doing that effect? Because there were all kinds of effects along the parade route. There were things hanging from cranes and it was just great. How are they doing that one? And I looked at them, I said, that's lightning. But the rain held out until the last float crossed the finish line.
Just
perfectly.
Thank God.
Awesome.
Yeah. You forgot to contact the Hurricane and Tornado Committee and tell them to postpone until 9:30.
No, I'm gonna give you a little different perspective that I learned about. Maybe we did plan that, or maybe the force in the universe intended for that to happen. You know, I looked out at that crowd of people, and we did have it planned. We had planned who was going to speak at the press conference. Mm-hmm. We had planned who was going to speak at Cathedral of Hope. We had planned who was going to speak at the monument. We had planned the two couples to stand up at that middle level of the monument to create this storytelling image that would be seen across the nation and honor the people that monument was built for, who never got to see this day. And I looked out and saw this beautiful example of the diversity in our community. Straight people with us, people of all races and faith traditions and gender expressions, and we were all there chanting gay, straight, black or white, same struggle, same fight. I will never forget that moment. And as we're rushing, Aaron and I were rushing to get each speaker through. We had one not show up, which allowed us to get quickly to Bishop Byrd, and then the rain came. And
it was like nothing, 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 boom, rain.
And then there it was. Now, we had gotten a bit of a reprieve through Harvey Milk. Like, we made it through Harvey Milk without the rain. And so as we stayed to clean up, like, Miguel and our friends that stayed, we could not have been more wet if we'd jumped in fully dressed in a swimming pool. But a friend of ours, the husband of the new pastor at Cathedral of Hope, pulled up and said, you know, in literature and poetry, rain and thunder and lightning are symbols of cleansing. And it was like, as I looked back on it and remember standing there in just buckets of water pouring over us, it was a very pure and spiritual moment and kind of a poignant end to an incredible day. So I'd like to say we planned that, but we didn't. But maybe the universe
that's
did.
That's what I was saying. The one thing they didn't plan quite right.
It was awesome.
Not supposed to do that in Dallas. In Fort Worth, it's fine.
It was amazing.
Houston, fine.
Right.
But Houston did plan that with their parade. It was just perfect.
And we did have our trifecta.
Which was?
June 26th.
Oh, yeah. The three, yes, on June 26th.
Right, right. We did.
Yeah.
Lawrence, Windsor, and Burgerfell.
Yep.
Incredible.
I just want to go back to the clerks. How many more counties do we have?
Very few. Very few. Erie and County, but there's a couple that's going to be going out there to force the issue. There's a nice one up in Denton County. A gay couple goes up, asks Justice of the Peace to marry them. He does marriages, and that's one thing. Justices of the Peace get paid to do a marriage.
Yes.
They had done he does quite a few. He makes money off of that. So he doesn't want to stop doing them. He can't do them. He can't discriminate. In other words, if you do weddings, you can set some standards. I want all, you know, everybody to be above the age of 18. I'm not going to marry young people, but you can't discriminate other than that.
We have a judge in Dallas County who only does weddings for people he personally knows.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah, right. But you can't discriminate against interracial couples, against religion, interfaith. So he had them sign a piece of paper that said J.P., and I forgot his name, J.P. so-and-so, agreed to perform the wedding even though he doesn't believe in same-sex marriage.
Oh, jeez.
He had them sign this before.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're investigating that to see if making up your own form to have people sign.
Right.
There's something about that. That would be like saying, I agree to marry you even though I find an interracial relationship disgusting. I agree to marry you even though, you know, there's a 20-year age difference between you two.
You're going to hell.
Yeah.
Basically, or, I'm going to...
I don't understand why two 78-year-olds need to be married. You're not going to reproduce. You know, I agreed to do this even though you're divorced, you slut.
Yep.
You know, but that's what he did. We'll be calling a couple of legal experts tomorrow and finding out about that. I just thought that was really amazing.
And people don't – what shocks me in all of this is that people don't see it – these people do not see it as discrimination at all.
No.
They put their rights ahead of us and so and treating us equally as public government officials. Mm-hmm.
Well, and we can't be guilty of elevating our religious beliefs above anybody else's. My deeply held religious beliefs are important to me and should be protected, but you don't get to elevate yours over mine.
Right.
Well, what I like also is because Jews are arguing, we have same-sex marriage in Israel. Don't talk to me about the Bible. So now we have some right-wing pastors who are blaming the Jews. I've heard that one before. I want to go to a different topic before we go because it's coming towards the top of the hour. The next show, they're just kind of rehearsing behind us. We only have one studio here. Next pledge drive, make a big pledge. No, that's fine. Next pledge drive, we'll get two studios. Tell us a little bit about Hope for Peace and Justice that you are executive director of. What is that group? What do you do?
Yeah, that Hope for Peace and Justice is a separate 501(c) from Cathedral of Hope, mm-hmm. founded by Cathedral of Hope a little over a decade ago by Reverend Piazza. And when I moved to Dallas, 3 years to the day that I'll be leaving Dallas, I wanted to find a way to get involved. The church definitely made me believe again in my spirituality and my need to get out there and get involved and to show that gays and lesbians were loved and valued. And so they had this little social justice organization. I think it was originally founded to deal with some of the anti-Islamophobia that had happened after 9/11, and then it mobilized to try to fight the Prop 2, I think is what it was called, to make marriage between a man and a woman. And then it did some things and then got involved, and we really saw it as an opportunity, myself along with some newer board members who were kind of more activist types, our statement is to empower people of faith to be advocates for peace and justice. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't have peace if somebody else doesn't. If there's injustice for someone, then really we're all called to deal with that. And so we began really getting involved in, okay, yeah, some LGBT stuff, but there are a lot of other issues that gay people, that anybody can get involved in besides their own self. So that led us into work beyond just mm-hmm. LGBT. From a faith standpoint, an interfaith standpoint.
Elena Kagan, Jewish.
Uh-huh.
Just pointing that out.
Yeah.
She had one of the best statements about it during the Supreme Court hearing of Obergefell. I think it was Scalia who was arguing something about whether or not we want to give those rights to those people, basically. He didn't use those words, but it was as offensive. And Elena Kagan said, it's our job to define the rights that people have. It's not our job to see who takes advantage of them. Hmm. Everybody has rights. Use your rights.
It's again, it's just disappointing to me that kind of the last battleground that certainly LGBT people have is faith, and it's offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so this little band of Mary faith affirming activists are going about our community, making relationships with one another, with people like us and people who aren't like us, because as I said the night of the rally, my life as a gay man can't matter until Black lives matter, until transgender lives matter, mm-hmm. until women's lives truly matter, and on the list goes. And there is a role for people of faith mm-hmm. to step out and not just believe, but to show what they believe and how they're informed. And that's what Hope for Peace and Justice is all about.
And also that late people's lives matter.
Thank you.
I'm a layperson. Absolutely.
You said, I think it was Josh, somebody said something about your being a pastor. You said, well, not exactly. Mm-hmm. What are your plans? Or don't you know?
I'm on this path of, and Miguel, bless his heart, is on it with me. I want to keep doing this community organizing work. I never meant to be one. I never intended ever to be in a radio show talking to people that I admire about work that they've been doing long before I got here. But this is what I've found. This is what I want to do. And I want to know how to do it better.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't finish my chemistry degree the first time. And this is going to give me an opportunity to go and get knowledge about something I really care about. Aaron would say to me, as echoing what some other friends have said, why are you going to learn to do what you're already doing? And I can't explain why, but what we're doing here in Dallas, the many people who have been doing this all along, who have taught me along the way, there are more people that need to know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to learn how to do it better, and I don't know where it'll take me. I don't know if it'll bring us back here to Dallas.
Hope so.
For work here, or for me to take whatever this gift is that I humbly acknowledge that I've been given, that has been nurtured lovingly by the people around me. But that's why I'm headed off. I'm going to study
so it could be
social
teaching,
transformation.
Could be teaching, could be organizing, could be church work. It could be anything.
You know, what I would find after my contract with Quality Texas ended, I got that job based on the career that I'd had before, which was allowing me to do some activism mixed with my work in communications. And what I discovered was I think I have an ability to lead an organization, to motivate and encourage people. And that's what led me into this expanded role with Hope for Peace and Justice. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's where I'll end up, you know, coming back. Who knows what will be here in Dallas for me or what work there will be to do. Or maybe I'll be in Detroit or maybe I'll be in inner city somewhere doing this faith work. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I can't wait to get out there and learn.
And for now, you're supposed to be gone at least 3 years, right?
I think I can finish everything that I want to accomplish in 3 years. It's a Master of Arts program, and then I'm going to also study sexuality and religion, too.
And why
in
did
California.
You
in Berkeley. All right.
Yeah, why did you choose, what's the name of the school you're going to, Pacific?
Pacific School of Religion.
When we have good schools here like Criswell College?
Wow, really?
Low blow, David.
Yeah. I thought about enrolling there.
I love your response.
And I'd go dressed just like this. Mm-hmm. Pacific School of Religion is definitely a progressive, leading progressive voice.
When he says dress just like this, we are radio. Miguel and Todd are both in pink. They are fashion plates. They look lovely.
They do.
They do. These are the formal shorts and jacket.
Formal shorts and jacket, yeah.
However, neither one of them, I don't think, has much of a chance for their interview at Criswell College. No less Baylor.
Or DBU or anywhere else. Yeah.
I want to go and get immersed. I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave Miguel and my friends and this community. This is, and yet we have it easy here. And the progressive.
So you're going to someplace more conservative like Berkeley.
The progressive liberal education that I can get there and the access that I have to interfaith studies, the Center of Islamic Studies, the Buddhist Institute, all of those are going to be accessible to me. And I really want to learn. I really want to continue to grow and expand. And that's the path that I think I've been on.
Now, I know you haven't been out too long, so I do want to give you some advice. When you go out there, there's another city. It's right across the bay. You might find some gay people in San Francisco. I don't know. If you've heard about that.
And just a few.
And at Berkeley, you might find some street corners where you could, you know, stand there and you know, shout a message.
Well, I hear there's some people who love making signs. You know, maybe someday I can teach a course on protest sign making.
You know, people laugh though. You mentioned it too.
And limbo basket weaving.
Yeah.
But I keep the poster board and the markers in my trunk in case a protest breaks out.
You never know. You need to go. That's what when I went to a Hands Up, Don't Shoot rally. I pulled that stuff out of my car. I felt compelled to go and be among the people, and I got looks of, "What the hell are you doing here, white man?" You know, and
with a sign,
and just to go and show up where you're not expected. I hope, if anything, that's what I've been able to inspire people to do. We can all do that. You don't have to be some activist, some community organizer. Anybody can go and do that.
And Laurent keeps a poster board too, but he lives in Garland. It's for his yard sales, things like that.
Exactly right.
Garland. Okay.
Have old baby clothes to sell.
So where does Hope for Peace and Justice go without you? They've had other executive director changes before, but
yeah, we're going to go. So we have a minister of social justice, Reverend Dr. Jeff Hood, and he's going to be our interim executive director. I'm going to stay on the board because it's not a control issue, really. I love the work that we're able to do. We're expanding partnership with some other local faith-based institutions here in Dallas, and so he's going to kind of guide us through the process as we search for someone full-time.
It's not a control issue. I can just picture the monument. They're going to have to install a little iPad where Todd will be up there above everybody directing the whole.
I'll tell you, this is the best, most exciting work of my life.
Well, we're not going anywhere, so you can always come back. Dallas will still be here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm coming back. My best friend was I introduced her to the woman that she married, and I get to be the best woman. And their wedding, their official ceremony is 2 weeks after I leave, so I'm coming back.
You'll be best gal.
Yeah, I'm so excited. about my bridesmaid's dress. It's really awesome.
Sure it is.
And the dyed shoes. You actually, keep them for life,
actually,
right?
I don't, can I tell? You know, we're going to have Tiffany Blue Converse, the guys.
Huh. Oh, cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. We're out of time.
Yeah, we are. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week on Lambda Weekly.